Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dalton Show on RT Radio 1.
That's Ava, age 3. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. In constant search of things to watch. And I meant to watch that Britney Spears documentary because everyone's talking about it. It appeared on Sky last night, but I didn't get around to it. And that'll be something for the weekend. But we did find a movie called Songbird with Demi Moore in it. And I don't know if this is your cup of tea. Probably it's too raw and too soon. But it's set in the year 2024 or thereabouts. And COVID-23 is ravaging the world. It's a mutant of COVID-19. And it's a dystopian type setup where there are people corralled away who are infected and people who have armbands are immune and they can travel. And then there are people offering ways of getting out of this whole thing. And they are criminals that demand large amounts of money. And it's a good plot, but not well executed. So what I'm saying to you now is it's there, but I wouldn't recommend it. Just to save you the time. It got 10% or something on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's there anyway. They can do things very quickly, can't they? You know, it's less than a year since we started this thing. And now they have a movie about it already. That's how quick things work. How are you this afternoon? Are you been lifted by the weather and the bird song and the vaccinations and the fact that the Johnson & Johnson one is on the way? It's gone for approval to the European Medicines Agency. And when they say yes, that's going to be a big game changer. Because it's a single dose vaccine and it doesn't have to be stored at minus 70 degrees. Europe has ordered a load of them. I was trying to explain to my daughter about, you know, that it was sort of like betting that governments and the European Union all over the world were betting on which vaccine was going to be okayed and work first. So they agreed to buy loads of them, millions and millions of them. And that's why. You would have heard on the radio earlier this week that the UK have more, way more than they can use, something like 400 million. And the man on the radio was suggesting that Micheál Martin get Boris Johnson on the phone and say, can we have some of yours, please? And that might happen. That might happen. And they may reconsider their decision on AstraZeneca and maybe give that to over 65s. That might happen as well. Anyway, so it's exciting times, exciting times. We're going to be speaking to Barbara Scully. She is a daughter and a mother, and we're speaking to her in her capacity as a daughter today because she brought her mum along to get vaccinated yesterday, and I'm sure that's the same for people all over the country, and they would have shared in the relief and the joy of getting vaccinated, their parents getting vaccinated. So we'll be talking to her. Also, two voices from SpongeBob SquarePants Oskelga. Now, they've been doing it for years as a TV series, but now it's a feature-length animated movie and Irish voices, which is great. We'll be talking to two of the voices there. And we're going to be talking to Brendan and Gavin as well. And Brendan and Gavin have two children and they're seeking legal rights for themselves as parents. So they want their children to be legally their children in this country. So we'll be talking to them about that. And Operation Transformation, Paul Devaney. We'll be talking to us, so too will Dr. Sumi. So lots to get through on the show today. Yesterday we were talking about pancakes and we made a little bit of a mistake. We were talking about pancakes from around the world and we had noticed a map. So you clicked on any country and it'll tell you what sort of pancake they make there. And we had a bit of fun with that, talking about the one they do in Finland and Denmark and China and all over the world. And we credited this to the ESRI. You see, and I was even saying, God, that's unusual that they would be doing something like that. It is unusual because they don't do that sort of thing at all. It wasn't the ESRI as we know them, the Economic Social Research Institute. It was a company in England called ESRI UK and Ireland. They're the people who are talking about the pancakes. So we do apologise for any confusion there. We know that the ESRI do great work, and indeed they were in the news for two stories yesterday, one about cancer and one about housing and the fact that some proposed legislation around housing might push up the prices of houses. So we thank them for their continued work. So that's there. We got an email from a listener. I've been decluttering, which is a thing to do this time of the year, spring cleaning. Nobody spring cleans anymore. They declutter. I've been decluttering and I found three pairs of old glasses. These would be spectacles, you know, reading glasses and the like. What can I do with them other than throw them out? Does anywhere recycle glasses? That's a good question. That's a very good question. I've loads of glasses at home. You know, when you, particularly, I don't know what it is for other people, but as you get older, your prescription for reading glasses changes. So the ones that you had originally, they don't suit anymore and they give you headaches and you know, all of that sort of thing. So you put them to one side. Is there any place that collects them, recycles them, upcycles them, whatever? Is there any use for them at all? Because some of them would have been expensive enough. So if you know of any organisation where you can recycle glasses, you'd be helping me and you'd be helping our listener as well. Now, today, our quiz of today continues. Today, 17th of February, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And we're looking for two people to answer five questions each, and we have a prize. Our prize this week comes from I Knew A Collection. Each day this week, a lucky listener will win a two-night break with dinner in any one of their four-star hotels. And they have them all over the place. You might want to kick back into Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, spend some downtime in Dundalk's Fairways, taste the magic of the four-star Tullamore Court Hotel in Hillgrove Monaghan, or any of their Radisson Blue hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. You can find out more. Inua.ie, that's I-N-U-A. And if you want to be one of the people taking part in the quiz with a chance to win that prize, you have to answer our qualifying question. Today, here it is. In which Irish province would you find the county of Longford? In which Irish province would you find the county of Longford? 1850-715-900. That's 1850-715-900. And we may be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Of course, today is Ash Wednesday as well. Forgot to mention that. Beginning of Lent. Loads of people are saying, why would you be giving up anything? Sure, aren't we living in a world where we have to give up everything? And maybe, and I've for a long time thought that this is the way to do it, is to do something positive. If you're going to do anything for the next 40 days, do something positive as opposed to a negative, giving up something. Do something positive. Even if it means saying hello to people you meet in the street. If it means getting out for a walk every day. If it means ringing somebody that you should have rang all the time, if it means knocking into a next door neighbour, socially distanced, of course, to see if they're okay. Do something positive. And if you are doing something positive for Lent, do let us know about it. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Specsavers recycled glasses. Just drop them in. Did they give you any money in return? So there you go. The Lions Club nationally collect old glasses for upcycling, says Liz in Dublin 8. So there's two options already. 51551 ray@rte.ie. George Baker selection, Little Green Bag on RT Radio 1, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Our local opticians in Thurles takes old glasses and they're sent out to third world countries. And some opticians will take your old glasses and send them on to poorer countries for use there, says Teresa. And I called into my local church in Crusheen, says Marion. On my way home from a walk, a man came in and checked a box on a table. He told me he collects old reading glasses, rosary beads and stamps for the missions. I came home and rounded up about 10 pairs and left them up today. Well done. That's Marion. And Crying Opticians in Dunleary recycled glasses. Please drop them in. We will give you a discount on any purchase. And I know before COVID, churches were taking old glasses for people in poorer countries. That's Anne Kilacky. And we spoke to, didn't we speak to a Kilacky? We did recently on the quiz. The more I think about our funniest joke in Ireland competition, the more I like it. It's just what the country needs. So we're putting it all together. We're getting a prize and we're working away and getting the technology together, how we can collect your jokes. And we're going to be telling you from Monday next week, the big search is on for Ireland's funniest joke. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And that's big news you'll be reading about tomorrow in the papers, that they've announced the cast for Conversations with Friends, which has been made for BBC Three. It's an adaptation of the Sally Rooney novel. And there'll be much anticipation about that. Because of the success of Normal People. A newcomer from Cork there, Alison Oliver, has been cast alongside Sasha Lane, Joe Alwyn, Jemima Kirk, And the same people who produced Normal People will be producing that. Oscar-nominated Lenny Abramson returns to direct alongside Leanne Whelan. So there, you'll be reading about that tomorrow. Good news this week. The vaccination is here for the general public. Over 85s are getting it this week. Writer Barbara Scully has tweeted that she delivered her mum to get her vaccination yesterday. And Barbara's on the line. How are you doing, Barbara?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you again.
And you?
Yeah. So I suppose, you know, we've seen the looks on people's faces and we forget that there's a family behind everybody who's getting the vaccination this week and next week and the week after. So how was it for you?
Well, it was surprising because I spent, as I'm sure a lot of people do, I spent a lot of time taking my mother, who is obviously 85, to various hospital appointments during normal times. She has a myriad of health issues which all need attention and monitoring and all that kind of stuff. So for me to pick her up and be bringing her to either the GP or to a doctor, a consultant's appointment is quite normal. So I suppose I kind of was surprised that when we got to the GP surgery, I found the scene, if you like, that I was confronted with surprisingly moving. I mean, for first of all, the local GP surgery had put balloons on the gate and balloons at the front door, you know, like there was a kind of a slightly party atmosphere. But at the same time, the cohort of people who were milling around, socially distant, all the rest of it. But as you know, you can't go into the surgery until, you know, they're ready for you. So the tiny car park was full of very elderly people, a lot of whom were very frail looking and who had mobility issues. Some were in wheelchairs. There was one or two on the rollators. Others were holding on to you know, whoever was with them, their carer or family member or whatever. But I found the whole thing profoundly moving that, you know, finally, here we are seeing something. For months we felt, well, for the last 2 months, like a lot of us have felt, we're actually have been going backwards, you know, like yes. After Christmas, yes. We got such a smack in the face and it felt like being, you know, I sometimes think it was like those, do you remember we went through that phase of all those trawlers being brought backwards in the Irish Sea and it felt by submarines or something. It felt like that. It felt like we were going backwards. And before that, it felt like we were going in circles. And yesterday was the first time possibly in a year that I actually felt, you know, maybe this is the beginning of the end. We're starting to make a move forward. And because it was all these people who need that extra bit of time and that care in handling them and in getting them down there, it just was very emotional.
And in that car park, Barbara, there were other people, there were other daughters and sons who were delivering their mums and dads up to get the vaccination.
Absolutely, yeah. It was all older people, and as you say, they most of them had somebody else with them to help them. So there was a lot of kind of there was a lot of trying to clever car parking and trying to get as near to the door as possible, yeah. And all that kind of stuff. But yeah, everybody had somebody with them, yeah, most, as I say, they were, in general, a lot of them were quite frail. But again, there was something about, as a society, that we have, you know, nominated these people, these very frail people, as the first people up to be protected against this bloody thing. I just thought
as it
was
should be, as
a
it
positive.
Should, yeah,
as it should yeah, be. But, yeah. You know, sometimes so much of what has happened with COVID has been kind of invisible. You know, we've all been shut into our homes. We've been separated from each other. And so a lot of it has been invisible. And suddenly, yesterday, there was a very visible, tangible kind of experience of watching the first wave, albeit in slow motion, a lot of shuffling, nobody moving very fast, you know. But I found it was profoundly moving. And the other thing that I was very struck by, and this would have been the case with my own mother, is that most of these people, I think, hadn't been outside their homes for months. Yeah. This was the first time they'd actually been out and going somewhere. And the fact that going somewhere was to get the first phase of a vaccination to protect them against this bloody horrible virus.
And Noreen, your mum, how was she through all of it? And
Well, now Noreen, my mum, is a great old one, but she has a load of medical conditions which make her life challenging. Right. She has a heart condition. She has one eye. She's quite deaf. She also has a degeneration of her spine, and that's gone up into her neck. So she would have quite a degree of pain. Okay. And in actual fact, she found, because she hasn't been outside of her own home, as I said, literally for months, she actually found the process of getting her out the door into the car. And I'm very used to all of this, and getting her down and out the other side. And she only had to walk a couple of feet. She found it exhausting, exhausting. Nothing to do with the vaccination, purely just the effort in getting her down there and getting her back home again.
But she's compos mentis, and she knows,
The
gravity of the situation and what this means.
Absolutely. Yeah. And she wouldn't have missed it like for anything. Like, she was going, and, you know, I had to be there on time so that she wouldn't be late. And, she was, and she's very relieved to have had it. And I know she's looking forward to, it'll be another month before she gets the second
dose.
And I know she's looking forward to that. And we're all hopeful that that would mean at least she might be able to visit our houses, you know, as things start to loosen up a little bit. So it was a really good day. It was a good day.
And I think this is brilliant, because, you know, it's going to happen quite quickly, although they're saying, you know, the end of the summer before everyone's vaccinated. But, you know, in a few weeks' time, we'll be talking to the first people over 70 who've got it, then the first people over 65. You know, so in that respect, there's going to be something happening all the time. It's not going to be stalemate. Yes.
Absolutely. And it's this feeling, which is new, that we're actually moving forward, we're starting to push back against the virus. Yes. Because for so long, the messaging has been, stay at home. It's like, keep your heads down. Don't look up. Stay down until we work this out. But now we're starting to feel it's a slight bit of a pushback. And as you say, that will gather momentum as more vaccines come online and as things start to, yesterday was the first day down in our GP surgery, and it was slightly organized chaos for a bit, but they got there, and I'm sure it'll become more streamlined as the, you know, as the system kind of beds in, if you like.
I love the fact that there were balloons at the gateway. That's just brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah, for a moment I kind of went in and went, what the hell? What are the, is it somebody's birthday? And then I thought, no, it's the first day of the vaccination. And they did. They made it like a special occasion.
Yeah, great. And Barbara, the last time we spoke to you, we were talking about your granddaughter, the birthday of your granddaughter in Australia, were we? Yeah.
My grandson. Yeah, grandson, I have a granddaughter who's 3.5. Right. And then my grandson arrived during the summer, without me.
So still, obviously, without you. So you're FaceTiming and all sorts of things, are you?
Yeah, he's getting used to the old FaceTime now. And I think he's starting to, he knows there's some kind of mad batty owl who talks to him on a reasonably regular basis, makes very strange noises and pulls very funny faces, and he actually laughs. I'm sure that when he finally actually meets me, I don't know whether it could be a good thing or a bad thing, because at the moment I exist in a phone as a very small kind of person in his life.
It could be a terrible shock when you arrive.
It could be an awful shock. I keep thinking of the day he'll be at Perth Airport and I'm 6 foot tall and not a small woman come at him, you know, making the same noises. He'd probably go, oh, holy God. What the hell is this?
Great talking to you, Barbara.
And
best wishes to Noreen, your mum. And thanks for taking time out to
talk
to us tonight.
That's very kind.
Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray@rte.ie. Now, later on this evening, I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Edith Eger about her new book. Well, it was out before Christmas, The Gift. And I know that she has thousands of fans in this country, and I know that a lot of people read her first book, The Choice. So we have, it's a lovely situation to be in, but we're now giving you the opportunity to maybe, if you want to, send us in a question or a comment that I can read to Dr. Edith Eger when I'm talking to her later on this evening. The reason we're doing a pre-record is that it's very early over there. She's 92, so the later the better. So we're doing it at 5 o'clock. So if you have anything you'd like to say to Dr. Edith Eger about her book or her life, being a Holocaust survivor, about her therapy, whatever you'd like to say to her I never had the opportunity to do before, now is that opportunity. So ray@rte.ie, and we will put your questions and comments to Dr. Edith Eger when we talk to her after the show today. Now on the line we have Brendan Spratt and Gavin McConnon. How are you doing, Brendan?
Hi, Ray.
How are you doing, Gavin?
Hey, Ray. How are you doing?
Good.
Nice. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Now you spoke to Brenda around this time last year.
Yeah, we were in on the first day of lockdown on the 16th of March.
Last year, right.
Yeah.
Now, who wants to tell me the story of your lives?
I'll let Brendan do that.
Okay, Brendan, so how did you meet, the two of you?
Yeah, we're friends about 17 years. We just met out in Dublin through friends, and we were in a big circle of friends for a long time. And 15 years ago, a group of us went on holidays and a few drinks were taken and we shared a kiss and we're together ever since.
Yeah. And it was that moment, because you had been friends. And I suppose a lot of people go, you know, I'm running the risk now of ruining a lovely friendship for something that may not work out.
Yeah, it was. We had this secret relationship for a few months. Well, for a few weeks, just to make sure. Yeah, it was a big risk to, because obviously we had a really good friendship, but there's a big risk going from friendship to boyfriend to partner. But thankfully, it worked out for us. I'm glad we took the risk.
Yeah. So when did you get married?
We were married 5 years now. We got married in May of the marriage referendum was in May. And we, by chance, we'd wanted to get married. We were together 9 years at that stage. A lot of our friends were getting married and we wanted to make a commitment to each other. So we had actually booked our wedding for the July after the marriage referendum. We'd booked a ceremony, really. So thankfully, the referendum passed then in May. So our wedding just turned out to be a huge celebration for all our friends. Yes. It just felt like such a huge celebration for more than just us. It felt like such a huge celebration for all the gay people in Ireland and their friends and families.
And then, Gavin, you need to go back and do it officially then, because obviously it was passed, but it took a while for the legislation to be put in place.
That's it, yeah. So the referendum was in May, but I think it was kind of towards the end of December that the legislation actually passed. So although we had a fantastic big day with our family and our friends and our humanist celebrant, we actually had to do the legal paperwork afterwards. So we did a second wedding a year later, and we decided we'd keep that really small, and it was just very close family and our best men. And at the same celebrant came along to that, and we just did it in a function room of a hotel. Yeah. And it was perfect again, but we didn't want to take away from the big day that we had the year before, which really was the celebration.
And Brendan, in the lead up to, you know, proposing to each other, was there chat about children?
You know, like Ireland, the world has changed so much we're both in our early 40s now. So like when we were in our 20s, I suppose we're just living our lives in our 20s. But the idea of having children just didn't seem possible to us. We didn't know any other gay couples with children. It just didn't seem like something that could be in our future. But it was actually at our wedding day, two gay friends of ours told us that they had started a surrogacy journey. And it was just around that time that it really seemed like something that could be possible for us to become parents, to create our own family.
Right. And Gavin, you and Brendan agreed that this was something you wanted to do.
Yeah, we'd been talking about it, I suppose. We'd spoken about it before our wedding, but I think at that point it was like this was something that it seemed now achievable and that the possibilities were out there. And I suppose after our wedding, you know, we started going on Google, we started looking up like, you know, how is this possible? What do we need to do? And there's lots of resources online for same-sex families and people who are trying to create their families and information about the journey and the process, because it's not easy. It's very complicated and it's a big learning experience. And what happened then was we took a honeymoon about 6 months after our wedding. We waited till January timeframe because we wanted to go to Australia. And it was while we were in Australia on our honeymoon, we said, let's actually start doing this seriously. Let's set up some Skype calls. Everybody used Skype before Zoom. We set up some Skype calls and talked to the agencies involved, which are mostly based in the United States, surrogacy agencies and IVF clinics, and just find out what the process is. And it was after those calls, we just got a really good vibe from the people that we spoke to. We kind of, you know, we decided we'd move forward with this and sign up with them.
Okay, it sounds like a callous way of saying it, but Brendan, describe the logistics of it, because it is a sort of logistical thing, isn't it?
It is quite complicated. I guess any couple that have gone to IVF will tell you what a roller coaster it is. We had the logistically, there's like you have to sign up with a surrogacy agency, and the surrogacy agency will match you with a surrogate.
Right.
But then on the other side, the second agency you have to sign up with is an IVF clinic.
Right.
And the IVF clinic will look after the medical side. So they'll create your embryos, and they then will implant the embryo into your surrogate.
Okay.
So that's it in a nutshell, really. Okay, we also
But just hold on now. We need to talk a little bit about that. So,
yes.
So you're through the surrogacy agency, you're finding a woman who's going to carry your child for 9 months.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And longer than 9 months, really, because, you know, this person could be in your life, or in our case, is in our life long after that. So it's such an important decision. And yeah.
You choose that person?
Well, that's why you go through an agency. Our agency said to us they are going to find us the perfect surrogate for us. So, you know, we flew to the States, we met the agency, you do a lot of paperwork, they get a real feel for you, what you're looking for, and then they told us that they were going to find us the perfect surrogate for us. And then 9 months later, we were on holidays and we got an email, and they sent us a bio for Noelle and Richard, her husband. And right. We just got a good feeling straight away. And we were like, yeah, these couple seem like the perfect couple to help us have a child.
And this is what they call commercial surrogacy. It's not altruistic. You have to pay this woman, Noelle, a fee.
Yes. So we, like as a same-sex couple, our options are limited where we could do surrogacy. So we wanted to go to the States where everything is done very legally and everyone is protected from the same sex couple to the surrogate.
So the IVF clinic then provide an egg, and then how is it decided whose sperm is used?
Well, it's even deciding on the egg is another part of the process.
Yes, of course. Yes. Well, that's a big part, isn't it? Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. You actually go to an egg donor agency then to find an egg donor, and that in itself is another complicated decision. And there's lots of different options there. But once you've made that choice, and the egg donor has donated their eggs, which is, you know, very similar to a traditional IVF process. myself and Brendan had spoken early on that we wanted to have two kids. Our plan was always to have two. So we decided what we would do if we got the right number of eggs was to split them in two. Excuse me. And try and go for one each.
One each. Right. I see. So use your sperm, Brendan, on one, and your sperm, Gavin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And that's the way it's been done. And you will, Theo and Lily, Theo is three and Lily is one. And they will know then, as they get older, which one is their biological dad, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not something we talk about like that. This is yours or this is yours. You know, we're one family.
Yeah, I know.
Theo,
I know.
But Theo and Lily know us as daddy and papa. And,
yeah, I suppose, you know, but it may have implications for medical things down the line. It could have.
Ultimately, you're right biologically. One of them is mine and one of them is Brendan's, but the egg donor is the same egg donor.
Yes.
So they're biologically connected on that side, and then the same surrogate carried the two of them. So they have the same relationship with Noelle, our surrogate.
Okay.
And you know, she keeps in touch as well.
Okay. You sent us in a copy of Lily's birth cert, state of Colorado, and it says she was born December 2019. She's female. And then it says father's name, Brendan Spratt, and then father's name, Gavin McConnon. There's very little detail apart from that on it. And that's it. That's Lily's birth cert. Now, that's not recognised, is it, by the Irish government? Is that it?
That's it. If we're in the States tomorrow, or if we lived in the States, that birth cert is obviously recognised, and we're considered the legal parents of Theo and Lily. Their birth certs are the same, and both of us are listed on the birth cert as father and father.
Yes.
But when we come back into Ireland with that birth cert, it's not recognised by the Irish legal system, which throws up all sorts of complications with everything.
So what's Lily's status then in relation to you in Ireland?
We don't have a status at the moment.
Right.
Both our children, even though Theo's three, in Irish law, it's the woman who gave birth to Theo and Lily is considered their mother. Now, just remember that Noelle, our surrogate, actually has no genetic relationship to our children.
Yes.
But in Irish law, the Irish law considers her the mother. But the worst part for us is that if your surrogate is married, which ours is, her husband is automatically considered our children's father. So in by Irish law, our surrogate and our husband are considered the children's okay. parents. And we're waiting to go through the courts to correct that for Theo. But our court date has been pushed back, obviously, to do with COVID. So at the moment, our status is just very grey. Neither of us have any legal status there.
So how did you then get Lily and Theo back into the country if you're legally not their parents?
Well, we're legally their parents, I suppose, in the US. We're biologically their parents.
Right.
And, you know, that.
So what about leaving the country then? Have you left the country with them?
We have, yeah. So they both have US passports.
No, but have
so
you left US Ireland with them?
Because they're born in the States.
Have you left Ireland with them?
We have left Ireland, yeah. Yeah, we have. Yeah, before COVID, Theo travelled a lot in his first year, and Lily unfortunately didn't get to go so far. But yeah, they both have US passports.
Aha, so there's no Irish documentation then, do they?
We've no Irish documentation. Okay. We managed to get PPS numbers for them just in the last couple of months, but even that was a complicated process where Brendan was dealing with the PPS office.
Okay,
it's just back and forth, and I got an email saying you need to. I'd sent an email to the PPS office explaining our situation and the uniqueness of it, and I got an email back saying you need to figure out question 9, whatever that was, and I looked at it and it said mother's maiden name, and I emailed them back and I just said, you know, we're a same-sex family, it's two fathers, and they just got back to me and said, listen, I need you to fill something out on this. I need something in mother's maiden name. So it's like just computer says no, you know, just had to, you know, I had to fill that out. So it was a bit of, like, just was a bit of a kick in the gut that we have to basically lie to get our kids a PPS number.
Okay. So in Ireland, right, are you guardians in Ireland, legally guardians of the two children?
So at the moment, we're legally nothing. What we're doing
connection to your two children.
We've no legal connection to our two children. We have applied to the courts in Ireland. This is the court date Brendan mentioned, which has just been pushed back because of COVID. And what we're applying for in the court is one of us is applying to be Theo's legal parent and one of us is applying to be Theo's legal guardian. And that's the best we can hope for here in Ireland at the moment. And that will give us, you know, obviously some sort of security, but it doesn't give us the security we want. Guardianship is not parental. It expires when the child becomes 18 years old. It would, you know, it affects things like decisions later on in life around, you know, medical decisions. It affects things like inheritance. And it's just not what we are. We're both Theo's parents and we both want to be recognised as Theo's parents.
Yeah. Now we got a statement from the department and it does say that there were guidelines issued in 2012 around all of this. So you would have been aware of what you were getting into, would you?
Well, we would, but we'd no other choice. Like, if we wanted to have kids, this was the only option open to us. The guidelines that have been issued, and I'm not sure exactly which ones in 2012, but there is discussions at the moment about bringing in the assisted human reproduction bill, and the legal part of it is above my pay grade. But my understanding of that is it will only affect couples who've been through surrogacy or IVF in Ireland.
You're right there. I read it there today. You're right.
That's not open to us as a same-sex couple. If you go as a same-sex couple to any IVF clinic in Ireland, they won't talk to you because they're not sure of the grey area in the legal situation and they don't want to fall on the wrong side of the law. So they just won't deal with you. So same-sex couples are forced to go abroad to have to create their families to other countries.
This is only proposed legislation, this one you referred to, but it's only going to allow for altruistic surrogacy, not commercial surrogacy.
Surrogacy is there, but it's very few and far between, and it is harder to source, obviously, because, you know, the surrogate doesn't get paid and they're doing it purely out of the for altruistic reasons.
Yes, yeah. And it's not going to legislate for surrogacy like you've been involved in. So it's not going to cover Lily and Theo at all in any way, shape or form.
No, and I'm afraid we're going to fall between the cracks there and that nothing is going to happen that's going to protect our family. And that is the fear.
What way do they do it in other countries?
If we were in the US, that those birth certs are just recognised.
Yes,
and like if we move to the US tomorrow for whatever reason, we're just the legal parents and that's the way it is. Yes. Yeah, every country is different around this and I wouldn't like to comment on how other countries do it because it is a legal minefield.
Yeah, I know there's a campaign which has been put together to try and get it sorted for people like yourselves. So the ultimate aim for you two is that Brendan Spratt and Gavin McConnon will be father and father to Lily and Theo. with everything that goes with it.
Yeah, like that's what we are.
So. Yes, I know, but legally,
exactly. We want the law to fully reflect our family. You know, myself and Gavin, as I said, we're together 15 years, we're married 5. Every step of the way, we've done this together, and in every step we are their parents. So we want their birth certs. And, you know, we're lucky that we had our children in Colorado, in Denver, where we could get our birth cert to say father one, father two, because that reflects our family. So what we would like is for Ireland, we love this country, we believe in this country, we think it's forward thinking and progressive. So it just feels almost embarrassing that our country is treating us like this. But also our children, our children will go into school and they don't have the legal protections with their parents that all their other classmates do.
If a straight couple, Ray, had a baby in the United States tomorrow, an Irish couple were in the States for whatever reason and they came back with their baby would have a US passport for the rest of its life. But that passport would automatically be recognised in Ireland because it would have a mother's name and a father's name. But they're refusing to recognise our passport, they're refusing to recognise our birth cert, even though it has both of our names on it. And that just feels like discrimination.
And could authorities in Ireland, if they wished, would they be in their right to stop you at airports? No.
It is our baby. They are our babies.
I suppose they're not recognising that legally they are babies in this country.
Yeah, worst case scenario, if something was to happen to our children in the hospital or whatever, we're not protected by law. So the hospital could keep us away from our children if they dug deep or realised that we've no legal relationship to them.
Right, okay. Yeah, you'd want to get this sorted before the two of them become of an age that they know what's going on, wouldn't you?
I think that's why we're just trying to raise awareness. And you mentioned the campaign there, Equality for Children. So we are starting to, as a group, lobby. But I suppose we are such a small, minority in the population that it is hard to get the government to listen to us and progress this.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure we'll talk in the future. This is going to take some time, I believe, just from talking about these things over the last 10 years or so. But for the moment, Brendan Spratt and Gavin McConnon, thanks so much for taking our call today.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Healthy Ireland. Helping you keep well.
Operation Transformation is on tonight, 9:35. We're at the business end of it now, just two to go, including tonight. And on the line we have one of the leaders, Paul Devaney. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm not too bad. How's yourself?
Good to talk to you. You're coming in loudly and clearly. And also on the line we have Dr. Sumi Dunn. How are you doing, Sumi?
Hi, good afternoon.
And you're coming in loudly and clearly. Great to hear you both.
That's great.
And thanks for taking time out to talk to us today. Now, Paul, I'll start with you. How are things going? We're sort of 3 months into your Operation Transformation experience.
Yeah, it's going well. It's delighted with it, you know. It's worked out very well for me. Had a few ups and downs, but more ups than downs. And, you know, it's worked very well.
Yeah, it was sort of, at times it was the might of Paul Devaney meeting the might of Operation Transformation.
There has to be a bit of confrontation in everything, you know. If it all runs smoothly, there'd be no excitement, would there?
No. And remind us, Paul, why you decided to do Operation Transformation this year.
I suppose I've done it because I wanted to improve my health, and I have a couple of underlying conditions, high blood pressure, sleep apnea. Yeah. So I wanted to improve all that and... You know,
you're on one of those CPAP machines when you go to sleep at night. And we'll find out from Dr. Sumi if that's going to change anytime soon. I have to say that your family are great crack, Paul.
Yeah,
all four of you.
We get on well. But sure, I suppose it's normal. You know, that's just everyday life. That's the way we are every day, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So you have two daughters, Michaela and Katie. Michaela's 15 and Katie's 11. She's going to be a stand-up comedian, your 11-year-old daughter, do you think?
She's priceless. There's something about her, all right.
There's something.
You know, I don't know where she gets it from.
Yeah. So just talk us through, before we get to Dr. Sumi then, the food aspect of it, because I'm saying this now, it's not an accusation or anything, but you're traditional when it comes to food, isn't it?
I am, yeah. Yeah. I suppose the one thing you have to remember is there's about 10 hours of filming done or so every week. And that's all brought down into 6 minutes of it.
Right.
You know, so it's very hard to get an accurate picture. And I suppose it's all about television too. So, look, at it. I'd be traditional person for eating, but also I'm very open to trying a lot of stuff, you know. But there was just a few things on it. But my big thing that I put across was it wasn't convenient for people that's working long hours and working away from home. And people working in general, they're not going to come home and spend 40 minutes preparing food, or even half an hour preparing food and half an hour, 40 minutes cooking food and preparing your lunches for the following day. And, you know, it's not practical. Like.
Okay. So you needed stuff that was more convenient.
Convenient food, you know, where you get it ready in a couple of minutes and cook it in a couple of minutes.
And was there
anything? You don't need 20 different ingredients.
Yeah.
You know?
And was there anything that you just didn't like the food? You know, it wasn't food you were used to.
Yeah, there was. And some all them things with beans in them, the ones that's not bachelor's beans.
That was one of my favourite lines.
You know, they're the bits I don't like. But everything else, I would eat and I do eat. I mightn't like it, but I ate them. You know, but I didn't eat the beans.
I've seen tonight's episode. It's okay. Remarkable. You look about, you know, 5 or 6 or maybe 10 years younger than you did at the start.
Yeah, I feel it.
Do you?
I feel it, every bit of it, yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because I've been banging on about this for years. It's not, and I know your waist size is reduced and that's important, and your neck size reduced, that's important. But I think if we could sell the feeling that you get,
the feeling is amazing. And I was just talking to a person today, a woman today, and she just stopped me and was talking to me. And I just said it to her, like, you know, it sounds an awful long time, 8 weeks, when you start at the beginning, when you look at it and you look at your weight, and it sounds 8 weeks is a long time. And sometimes we're very guilty of, we can't look forward to see it's going to take 8 weeks to change. But when you start knocking the 3 and 4 pounds every single week off, you know, and you start feeling better and better and better. It's just an amazing feeling. You have to buy into the idea of it,
right?
You know, and when you buy into the idea of the food and the exercise, and I know people think that the experts aren't that friendly, and what they're very friendly, and what they do, they're there for a reason, to get the best out of you.
Okay.
And by doing that, and if you stick to the plan, it's amazing. Like,
now tonight we'll see you tell Eddie that you're on the phone 6 to 7 hours a day, which is an awful lot of time. And you say that a lot of that time is spent talking to your mates. How have you explained to your mates the feeling? I'm sticking with this feeling now. What is it? What is it about it?
The feeling of how I'm feeling,
yes,
is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I suppose anybody that knows me knows what I've been at, and they'd be asking me every day, how am I getting on, how am I feeling? And I tell them I'm feeling amazing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you can bounce up and you've more energy and you can think clearer, and everything is a lot different, you know, when you just go through, I suppose, what the transformation. Stuff is a lot clearer, you know, every way, like the feeling, everything. It's probably very hard to describe it, but when you start losing that much weight and you start sleeping better, like I'm sleeping now what I haven't done in years, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
That is the biggest thing for me from Operation Transformation, is I can go to bed. And even last night, I said to Bubbles last night in the kitchen, I said, I'm going up to bed now and I'm happy out going to bed. I don't know when I was ever happy before going to bed, because you'd go to bed and you'd be lying there for hours and hours and you wouldn't sleep. Now, 3 minutes, I'm out cold.
That's brilliant. I'm delighted for you, Paul. I'm really delighted because sleep is so important. So important.
Anybody that would be suffering with sleep apnea, they would have to look at the journey I did. If they're on a sleep machine, or if they haven't got that fair and they can't sleep, they have to just look at your diet and exercise. And I couldn't say any of them is better above the rest. They're both the same. You need both of them in equal measures, you know.
We'll bring Sumi in now. So Sumi, I was saying there that Paul has lost a number of inches around the circumference of his neck, and that's hugely important when it comes to sleep apnea, isn't it?
Absolutely, because we certainly know in men with a collar size of more than 17 inches, you're a greater risk of sleep apnea because the larger collar size increases the bulk of the soft tissue in the neck. And that then, when you lie down, can put strain on the airway, which then can block the airway, which then leads to those episodes of apnea through the night. So the fact that Paul's neck size is decreasing, I mean, that's phenomenal. It's a huge, you know, credit to him.
Yeah. And what about the future then? If he keeps going in the direction he's going in, will he be able to get rid of that CPAP machine?
It's, you know, with this, probably still some work in progress. And I think the cornerstone here will be to get retested as and when possible.
Right.
And that will determine through a validated sleep study whether we can get through and away from the machine. But I am very, very optimistic because, again, you know, the changes through lifestyle modification have been key here for Paul.
Yeah. And you've seen it firsthand there, the transformation in his face, you know, and it's not just about losing the weight, it's about expression and the skin and everything.
He looks amazing. He looks at least 10 years younger. I know that's not very objective, but when you see someone week on week, they really do look well. And throw into that the added quality of sleep, and we can't underestimate how important sleep is. It all of these little things add up to the bigger picture and the bigger journey.
Yeah. Now, again, people would see tonight that you had to do the weigh-in remotely, Paul. Sumi, will you explain what happened there?
Yeah, so Paul is aware, and we were made aware, that Paul is a casual contact. So he's a casual contact of someone that's a close contact of a known case, if you're still with me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's the first time I heard the expression, the phrase, casual contact. So you better explain it to us.
Okay, so a close contact is someone that for definite has been in contact with someone who is a known positive case.
Right.
So that they were near them, possibly in a room, maybe unmasked, closer than 2 metres for more than 15 minutes. Okay. And that can happen, particularly within a household. That can happen very easily. Then the question is that what about everybody else within the household? Well, then if you weren't that person in close contact with the positive case, you necessarily aren't a close contact. You may be a casual contact, which is what we determine Paul to be. And if you're a casual contact, you don't have to restrict your movements.
Okay.
But you have to be aware that if the close contact gets symptoms, or if you get symptoms, your status changes. You go from being a casual contact into a close contact, or from a casual contact into contacting your GP to be tested.
There's a lot of contacting going on there.
So it, and I caught my breath there in the middle of it.
Paul is a close contact once removed, which makes him a casual contact.
Exactly. That's actually a really, really good way of putting it. He's a close contact once removed, which makes him a casual contact, which means he doesn't have to restrict his movements. However, given the environment of the studio, given the environment of how the week was going to evolve, we erred on the side of caution to say, let's just do a remote weigh-in. Let's see that everything is okay. And then, you know, it will aid for the rest of the week with regard to coming up for finale, being with the bubble in the studio, etc.
Right. And it's odd that your partner, Paul, is bubbles, and there's a lot of talk of bubbles at the moment. bubble in a bubble. Tomorrow now, it's the virtual 5K, and I see that like 25,000 people from all over the world have signed up to do it. You're going to be walking it, are you, Paul?
I'm walking it, yeah. I can't do any, because the ankle injury I had, I cannot do any running or jogging until at least June time. So I'll be walking it.
Great, okay. But it'll be great to be involved in such a big event.
Why wouldn't it, yeah? It's you know, it's, I suppose it's the final hurl, really, you know, and it's great to be able to get out and do it. Sure, anybody that can get out and do any exercise is brilliant, you know.
Yeah. And I see you called the bingo for the local GA club, is it local GA?
Well, just the local community development.
Local community,
It's kind of all clubs involved.
How did you get into that?
It's just community work. I suppose I've been involved in community work for the last 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And that's just one element, the bingo. And the two things I'm involved in is the bingo and the music festival, you know.
Right. And you're doing it remotely, calling the bingo remotely.
Doing it remotely, yeah, which is brilliant. You know, anybody around, like you said there with the virtual walk, anybody around the world can play. Last Friday night we had a lot of people playing in Sydney. Right. I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning. Right. But there was a lot of family members from the community, from Kilconnelly, that was in Sydney playing, you know.
Right. What's 22?
All the twos, 22.
Oh, that I thought it was... what's the most...
Two little ducks.
Two little ducks, that's it. Is that 22 as well?
Yeah, 22 as well.
Sumi, away from bingo and on to the big news story of this week, which is the rollout of the vaccination to over 85s.
Absolutely.
And it's an exciting time, isn't it? I just... The faces of people, both medical professionals and the people who are getting it, it's a sight to behold. Have you got the vaccines down in your GP yet, Sergi?
No, we haven't. We're expecting a delivery next week and we cannot wait. I mean, it's been the best news story. Everybody that we've wronged to book in for the clinic next week, we've had no hesitancy, lots of good fun down the phone, and we can't wait in the practice to have this very vulnerable group in with us and get them vaccinated.
Yeah. They'll go in next week to your surgery as one type of person and they'll walk out a completely different person, won't they?
They will, yeah. But they also need to come back to us.
I know, for the second one, but I know, but it's yeah. just, it's such a seismic thing that's going to happen, because there's been a lot of fear for people over the last 11 months or so.
Absolutely. And, you know, such a deserving group of people. And when we're looking at them, the impact of our very, very older community and the impact of lockdown and not having that human touch of grandchildren, not having being able to get out and having your independence, the deconditioning that we've seen in some of our elder community, this is just that very first step to getting back to some sort of normal route.
Great. OK, so tonight's Operation Transformation, second last one, 9:35 after the news. Paul Devaney, thank you very much. Mind yourself and everybody you love. And Sumi Dunn, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Healthy Ireland. Helping you keep well.
Nisha Tosha now in the Fríamh Skelton and Nogtil and Mar de Wallace. Gurma, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And good luck to everybody who's taking part in the Operation Transformation 5K tomorrow, the day after, and the day after. And you can still sign up for it if you go to rte.ie/OT. And there are people, as I said, from all over the world doing it. It's been kicked off. The starting gun has been fired by the Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chew, at the Mansion House tomorrow morning. And I believe I've been nominated as the first person to run it. So I'll be doing that somewhere around UCD or something. There'll be cameras there, as Facebook Live. So it'll be a bit of crack. The question is, do I bring the dog with me or not? That's the big question, because I run every morning with the dog. But will that be hassle, or I don't know. I think I'll bring the dog with me. So why change a habit of a lifetime? Anyway, good luck to everybody who's doing that in the morning and on Friday and on Saturday. Anya in Kinsale has been on to us. My mum, Anne in Kinsale, loves listening to the show every day. She adores the quiz, which is on the way. My sister Michelle gave her a new exercise bike for Christmas, and she cycles as she listens to the quiz. It's part of her lockdown routine. She calls it her Ray August Roher time. Isn't that great? It would make her day if you could please say hello to her as she cycles. How are you, Anne? Keep it going there. Yeah, keep it going there. Keep it going on the old exercise bike. And we better get the quiz going. That's what you like to do, as you cycle your exercise bike. So here it is, the quiz of today. Today, the 17th of February. We have 10 questions ready to go on events that happened on this day. We also have a prize to give away. Our prize this week comes from the Ainua Collection. Each day this week, a lucky listener will win a two-night break with dinner in any of their four-star hotels for themselves and a friend. And they have, as I say, hotels all over the country. Kilkenny, Dundalk, Tullamore, Athlone, Cork, Limerick, Sligo, Monaghan. And you can find out more at ainua.ie. Alan Carty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
How are things in Robertstown?
Yeah, not too bad.
You're on the canal there?
I am, just beside, just up the hill, yeah.
Right. Not a lot of activity, I'd imagine, on the canal these days, is there?
No, hasn't been for years.
Yeah, but would you get the odd barge going up and down there, people, during the summer?
Yeah, people, you know, the personal boating people, you know. There'll be traffic through it, all right, but the big tourist barrage hasn't been on it now for years.
Hasn't it? No, no.
No.
There was a hotel there, wasn't there, just on the canal?
Yeah, the Grand Canal Hotel, yeah, closed as well for a long time.
Right, and what's that building now? Is it anything?
Nothing, it's just sitting there, lying derelict.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we need to do
something
with those sort of buildings, don't we?
Indeed.
Because they fast become eyesores.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They come in disrepair. And
yeah, yeah. Anyway, you're just in from work, are you?
Yeah, just in about half an hour, 35 minutes, yeah.
Right, what do you work at, can you tell us?
I work in a meat factory, Brady
right.
Ham.
Okay. And Brady Ham sponsored the Kildare football team, do they?
Kildare footballers, yeah.
And they had that
Kildare
brilliant
footballers and hurlers, yeah.
They had that brilliant ad that used the black and tans, Camochi black and tans.
that was a good one.
Them, yeah. Right. And what's your story at home, Alan?
At home, wife works from home at the moment.
Yeah.
She's an accountant. Her normal place of work is in Dublin, so no travelling for her. She's working in the back room there, and the kids are with the granny today.
Right. Okay, because you formed a bubble, have you, with the granny? Yeah,
with the granny, yeah. Right. Cause they were always our child minders.
Aha, right.
Before all this, you know, they looked after our kids since they were born. Could we worked?
That's handy, isn't it? That's handy.
So yeah.
So you listen to the quiz like Anne on her bike, and do you get
but not on the bike. Yeah.
do you usually get the questions right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, right. Okay, you're up against Noel Kern in Buncrana in County Donegal. How are you doing, Noel?
Not so bad, not so bad, Ray.
K-E-I-R-N, is that how you spell your surname?
No, K-E-R-I-N.
Ah, Karen.
Yeah.
Aha. Yeah, like there's loads of variations of that, isn't there? There's Kerns and Karen and all sorts of spellings and pronunciations.
And my one is originally supposed to have come from Oran Mór in County Galway.
Aha, right.
There's K-E-A-R-N-S and...
Yes, Kerns.
Whole pile of them, but we're supposed to be from Oran Mór.
K-E-R-I-N. And is that an anglicised thing, is it? Because
as far as I know, I think we were one of the French Huguenots.
Oh, were
something.
You? Right, okay, right. Yeah, there you go. So it's not anglicised at all, because there's no K in the Irish alphabet. Isn't that right?
No, it's Kerin, C-E-I-R. I-N in
that's
Irish.
In Irish, right. So that'd be just a make-up one then, if it's originally a French name. So how are things in Buncrana today?
The same as the last 5 months.
You have to laugh, Noel, or else you'll cry.
that's the only good part to it.
Well, at least you have the company of your grandchildren. A lot of people don't.
Yeah. That's the only ones we see inside the door.
Right, isn't that great? Because we've heard so many sad stories about, you know, grandparents being separated from their grandchildren and having conversations through Windows and through Facebook, you know, and all that sort of FaceTime. So who have you got there? How many grandchildren?
Three, Emma, Lauren and Noah.
Right. And what ages are they, Noel?
9, 5 and 3.
Right. And you're anxious to get the vaccine ASAP?
Yeah. I would have a double lung transplant.
Did you? When did you get that?
July 15th to July 2017.
And how are you?
Fuck, I'm not so bad. No use me complaining because there are a lot of other people sick as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'd have good days and I'd have bad days, but generally I'd be in good form the whole time.
Good. Good. You sound like you're in good form today. Now, you're up against Alan. Alan, say good luck to Noel there.
Good luck, Noel.
Noel.
Thank you very much, Alan. I hope I'm better than you.
I love you, Noel. I love you. Okay, let's go. Here we go. Right. No, it's... Hey, there we go. There we go. Alan, first question for you. On this day in 1772... the first partition of Poland was signed in Vienna by Austria and Russia. What's the capital city of Poland?
Is it Warsaw?
It is. And for you, Noel, on this day in 1867, Gajula Andresi became Prime Minister of Hungary. What is the capital city of Hungary?
Prague.
It's not. It's Budapest.
Oh, Jesus. Budapest.
Budapest, yeah.
Okay. That's the wrong one.
Yeah, it is. Early days. Don't fret. Alan, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
I have my heart broken, Christy Brown. Sometimes sometimes I take your arm, my heart. Look, if I could give you my legs, I would gladly take yours. What's wrong with you, Christy?
On this day in 1945, Brenda Fricker, actress, was born in Dublin. Can you name the film you heard her in there?
Was it My Left Foot?
Yes, and she won an Oscar for that. Well done. Noel, have a listen to this.
Ginny.
Harry, it was me. But I swear, I didn't mean to. Riddle made me. And Harry, you're hurt.
Don't worry.
And this day in 1991, Bunny Wright, British actress, was born. She's best known for her role as Ginny Weasley in that film franchise. Can you name it? Any idea, Noel?
Not a clue.
There was a clue in it. There was a clue in that piece we just played. I suppose it's easy because I'm looking at the answer here. Harry Potter. Harry Potter. She mentioned Harry in it. Okay.
Before my time.
Right. Yeah, or after. stay with us there, Noel. Alan, question number three for you. On this day in 1910, Arthur Honeycutt, American actor, was born in Kansas. The question is, how many US states in total begin with the letter K? Two or three?
I go with two.
You're right. Kansas and Kentucky. Right, Noel, we need you on the scoreboard. Good luck with this one. On this day in 1861, Confederate President Jefferson Davis was inaugurated in Montgomery, Alabama. How many U.S. states in total begin with the letter A? Is it three or four?
I got three.
I was trying to telepathically communicate with you up in Buncrana there to tell you it's four: Arizona, Alaska, Arkansas, and Alabama. Now, at this stage, you're on three, and Alan's on three. There's only two questions left, so you can't catch him. Am I right there? I am right. I'm right there. Yeah. Okay. So we'll sort of let you out of your misery, so to speak. Alan, hold on there as I say goodbye to Noel. Noel, we're going to send you out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs.
Fair play to you.
Yeah.
That's mostly what I wanted.
Great. And you can show them off when you get people around when we're at the end of all this. And I really enjoyed our chat. And stay well and stay safe.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Noel.
To be on.
Great. It was great to have you on. Great. Thanks, Noel. Bye.
Bye.
Alan Carty in Robertstown, congratulations. Yep. Well done.
Thanks very much.
So you can go now to the iNUA website, inua.ie, and you can pick out which hotel yourself and your wife are going to visit when we're at the other side of all of this.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Ray.
Well done, Noel. Mind yourself. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
News on Anne on her bike. Gramila Margot for saying hi to Mum. She nearly fell off the bike when she heard her name on the airwaves. That's good. Now, on Friday, we're going to be talking to David Gray. There's a new album out and there's loads of Irish connections to it. So just to whet your appetite, here is one of the tracks from Same. Heart and Soul, David Gray from his new album, Skellig. That song is a thing of great beauty. Wow, says somebody on text. And we'll be talking to David about the album and how he's collaborated with various Irish artists, singers and musicians on that and other things on Friday. If you're a fan, put that in your diary. Now, one of the most popular cartoons in the world is SpongeBob SquarePants. And for several years, you know this if you're a fan of Irish language cartoons, the episodes have been revoiced in Irish for TG Carr. Now, the latest feature-length film, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge on the Run, is available Oscailge on Netflix. Or Oscailge or Netflix. So if you're looking for something for the kids midterm, it's a good choice. And we have two of the Irish actors who voiced parts of the movie on the line. We have Lachlan O'Maron. How are you doing, Lachlan?
How are you, Ray?
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
It's
good
odd because on the other side is Marcus Lamb. And there's a word that you people will know you for. How are you doing, Marcus?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Go on, say lamb for us, Lachlan, there. Go on.
Irish lamb. Always look for that. Finish that sentence.
always look for that. Oh, yeah, it's there. It's like responding to a prayer. Always look for that. Go on, you do it.
Board be equality, Mark.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Marcus, good to talk to you again. I spoke to you and your mum on the TV show not so long ago.
Yes.
Geraldine Plunkett. Have both the Marcus have been voicing the TV version of it for a number of years?
Quite a few years. Lachlan, you've been doing it longer than me, is that right?
Yeah, I was the initial Patrick. I've been a stupid starfish for about 20 years now, I think.
And Marcus, you played the part of?
I play SpongeBob. Yeah, I was an actor called Tom O'Sullivan, who people will sort of recognise. Handsome fellow with grey hair was SpongeBob until about 9-ish years ago, maybe 10. And then he wasn't available, and then they said, right, we'll audition you. I went, did the audition, and lo and behold, I've been doing it since, and it's great crack.
How do you prepare for an audition to be SpongeBob SquarePants, Oskelgi?
There is no way to prepare. you go into the wacky part of your brain, Ray, I suppose. Just kind of, let loose and see what happens. I was always a fan, actually. I just love SpongeBob. It's just brilliant. So, I was delighted to get the chance to give it a go, you know.
It's out there, isn't it, for want of a better description?
Completely, yeah. I mean, like, Steve Hillenburg came up with the idea, and he died just over a year ago or something, but he was a bit of a genius. And I heard Tom Kenny, who does the voice of SpongeBob, being interviewed, and he was at an audition for an ad or something, and there were little people there who were going for the parts of elves and things, and he heard a guy going, I'm just sick of doing these auditions, and he had all this awful language came out, you know, I don't mind being an elf, I just want to keep doing it, you know. So he was telling Steve Hillenburg this, and Steve Hillenburg was laughing, going, that's hilarious. And 4 years later, Steve Hillenburg was doing SpongeBob, and he brought Tom Kenny into audition, and he did Barry's voice, and he thought, no, that's not it. And then he said, hey, remember that person you did at the audition, would you just do that? And he tried it, and he thought, bang, that's it, we have our SpongeBob.
Your man Hillenburg, he was a marine biologist, was he? And a cartoonist. It's a good description.
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know too much about him,
So Lachlan, you're Patrick, and Patrick is SpongeBob's friend of sorts.
Yeah, so when you talk about preparation, I have to venture into the deepest, most stupid part of my anatomy and pull out this person who just lives completely on emotion. He's guided by his stomach and his fascination with jellyfish.
Right.
You know, so he's easily distracted. So in a way, he does sum up a child who goes from various emotions. Like, you've got kids, you know, they could be laughing.
Yes.
And then 5 seconds later, they're in tears and they're back laughing again, all within the space of 20 seconds, you know.
And you've four children, Lachlan, 6, 8, 10 and 12.
That's right, yeah, last time I counted, yeah. But we found out what's causing it, Ray.
I see. We have a clip from the movie. So it's Patrick and SpongeBob in a car together having a bit of a tete-a-tete. Oskelga.
Derm she's gone on boher is Derm Tussa Bur. Beirut Amadach Dur Tussa Chin.
In our era, Amadach. Oh, not to at all on the your own, Patrick.
Buechus. Capim Gwilym Gwma Egeir Nol Freshin. Shans Murnamech Duch Chawn Lawn Le Ganyaf. Dei Tote Eir Nol Chama.
Siar Chawn Lawn Le Ganyaf. Na Chawn Chol Chob Le Clach. A Gamil.
Gah! Shin Shin! Stop on Cor!
Yeah, stop on Cor, Otto!
Stop and car, stop and clue on, I would have said. But anyway, there you go.
Yeah. So we have to get the lip sync as well.
Yes, I know. Yes, the clue on wouldn't have worked. Yeah. So you recorded the voiceover during lockdown last year, so it wasn't the usual way. So you're completely on your own, which must have been a bit crazy, Marcus, was it? Where were you?
Yeah. I've got a wee little house in Bray with my wife, and she was in the other room doing on sort of Skype and or probably Zoom actually. She was on meetings with work and so on. So I've created a little home studio where I've opened the doors of the cupboard, and I hang blankets off the bed
right
over the doors of the cupboard and inside the cupboard. So I'm kind of like some kind of weird hermetic kind of actor type, and I have my fancy mic, which is not that fancy a price, about 100 quid or something, and I have it plugged into the laptop, and then the director and the sound engineer on the other end God bless them, and they kind of go again, that was rubbish, and or whatever, you know. And yeah, so that's what we do. My wife's in the other room, right, explaining to people on the other end of the Zoom what the hell is going on in the background. Yeah,
and you, Lachlan, you've a shed, so you actually leave the house.
Yeah, I've a shed. Well, out the back, I've a shed. Yeah, but it's this thing, this phenomenon where everyone's working from home, but now there's no hiding place, really, is there? So I know everyone's out in their sheds working these days, but I went out to my shed. I had some builders in doing a job as well, and I was like, I just have to do a bit of work here for an hour, and they just see me in the shed just making these ridiculous noises, and they're like, well, what exactly is it you do for a living?
I'm SpongeBob. You're working in Italy at the moment, Lachlan. How's that going for you?
Yeah, good. I'm on the spaghetti westerns are back in fashion here now, so we're shooting a 7-part spaghetti western over here. So with COVID, etc., I've got to come over a bit earlier and hang out and quarantine. But I have done my first day filming, which was involved chewing a stick for the whole day, basically. So there's not much happens for me, my character. So that's me for another week. And then I'm back on and get my head blown off on Tuesday.
Oh right, you get shot in the head on Tuesday, right? Okay,
shot in the back of the head, yeah.
So have you ever got shot in the back of the head before in an acting role?
No, I've been shot in the front of the head and in the neck, and had an arrow in the head and shot in the chest, and recently just died of cancer as well on a TV show that's coming in next week. So. Yeah, it's like I try not to take it too personally.
Yes, yeah. But there's a serious aspect to this in that Brexit has been good for actors, Irish actors, has it?
Well, this is what I'm encountering here at the moment, because, for example, there's British actors on this, but each of them has to get a visa to travel to a country, and we have to go from Italy to Spain to Morocco for this, so they have to get individual visas for those countries.
Right.
Whereas Irish actors don't. They also have to quarantine now for 2 weeks separately, so they're not allowed near us. They've really become this, in a way, persona non grata. They're a bit more difficult to organise a British actor to work in the continent.
Yes.
So it's all up in the air, so nobody really knows how it's going to play out. But at the moment, it could be a good opportunity for Irish actors, because we are the other English-speaking actors in Europe.
Yeah. And what else are you doing, Marcus? I believe you're preparing for a musical, which you can't talk about.
Yeah, I'm going into a Zoom rehearsal for a week on a quite exciting new musical, which I can't say a word about. I have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But yeah, I was doing it called Valhalla, which is kind of a continuation of Vikings, up in Ashford Studios in Wicklow just before Christmas. I was doing that for a couple of months, so that was really interesting. And they had the nurses around, and you were getting swabbed pretty much every time you turned up, every couple of days, getting the giant Q-tip up your nose and all that. But it was kind of nice to know that you didn't have COVID.
Yes,
it was kind of handy. But amazing, the amount of kind of infrastructure and logistics involved, like incredible, you know.
Yeah.
When you've got like thousands of extras and horses and God knows what around, you know.
But they're finding ways around it.
Finding ways around it, so yeah.
Now, SpongeBob movie, SpongeBob on the Run, is available, Oscar Elga, on Netflix. Thanks so much to Lachlan O'Maron and Marcus Lamb. Thanks, lads. Mind yourselves. That's it from us.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye. Slán, Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.